Welcome to the Sunday night There Is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. I'm now going to introduce Annie B., our member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After she shares, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what Annie has shared. So please help me welcome Annie, a recovered compulsive overeater from Oregon. Yay! Take it away, Annie.
Thank you so much, Pat. Thank you for your service and inviting me to share. You'll have to excuse my voice. I'm was yelling at a 6,000 student conference this last week. So I hasn't recovered yet, but I'm feeling just fine. It just is a little forced. So so grateful to be at a newcomer meeting. You newcomers and new returners are the most special people in the room and just super, super precious to me and to us and to a higher power. So I just like this little paragraph in the Big Book and how it works. It says, our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. And so that's what I'm hoping to share with you today, is what I used to be like, what happened, and what I'm like now. Excuse me. So I grew up in, I grew up a compulsive overeater. I, from a very early age, like my first memories were climbing on the counter at like probably 3 years old to get cereal from the top shelf before anybody else got up in the house. The story of my birth goes that I didn't see my mom for the first couple of days of life for no real reason. Like it was some emotional distress. And that I was actually called failure to thrive. So it was very interesting that I was like thin as a baby. but I think it makes sense when I think about my story and why I'm at where I'm at, which honestly, the question as to why doesn't totally matter, but this is the story of how it was. So my first memories are of reaching for food. I experienced some abuse and neglect as a child, sadly. And food was my comfort. Food was my solution. Food was my friend. Food was my mother. Food was my lover. Food was everything. So I grew up on a stage, actually. I grew up in dance. That was just something my family did. So I had the vulnerable of being in, some of us might know, being in a leotard on a stage in front of people was just something I did from the time I was 3 years old. And so I have lots of pictures of, you know, I had some not kind statements said to me from my family of origin, that like words like butterball and tubalard were used to describe me as a child, which was just so horrifying to my little psyche. I didn't even know what it meant, tubalard, like it's tub of lard, but I didn't know what it meant. And I just knew that that's what I was being called. So I pretty quickly learned to, restrict as a young person.
That's cool.
And oops, sorry, somebody's unmuted.
Unmute yourself again, Annie. I had to mute everybody. Sorry.
No problem. That's no problem. So I quickly learned kind of how to navigate the caloric intake versus my body. I was always larger than my peers, but I would kind of fudge it, if you know what I mean. Some of you know what I mean. In high school, I started to really restrict and start to really do some weird behaviors with food. And ended up being like, only eating gummy bears. Like that was one of my diets. I did like all the diets, like every diet. From the, my mom took me at a pay and weigh when I was 8 years old. And that was kind of like, it was weird because it was kind of special for me and her, but it was my first like official weight loss that, you know, I had to go to. And it was with, in my mind, a bunch of old ladies and me, a little tiny girl. So it was pretty traumatizing, but also special. Like it taught me that there was something special about this way that I do deal with food. So in high school, there was a turn for me. I had kind of a spiritual awakening that I didn't have any religious upbringing as a child, but in high school and early college, I found out that there was a God who loved me. And so I started to actually relax, and which caused me actually to just go hard into the food. Like I binged and binged and binged. I felt like the relief of some sort of higher power that cared about me. And I just took food as part of that. It was very, very odd. So I ended up meeting my husband and having two babies. And when I was pregnant, my body was such that I just felt the most safe because it felt like I was hidden behind this little person. And I felt like I could eat whatever I wanted and nobody could, you know, judge me or question me. But the truth was my compulsive overeating was at like really intense amounts. My binging was happening every day. My pattern that was, so having two babies and recovering from those kiddos back to back, they were pretty close in age. But my pattern was at the height, it was wake up remorseful, like starve or swear off food till about 10 a.m. Start eating at 10 a.m. Don't stop until like 12 or 1. Feel remorse again at 1, like after a 3-hour binge. And then swear off food again for... I would always swear off food forever. Like it was until I'm thin. Like that's literally what in my mind it was said to me. So, and then obviously like binge again from like dinner on. I would often make dinner and eat while making dinner enough, obviously for a meal, maybe more, and then sit at the table with my family and eat the whole meal with them. So my patterns were restrict, binge, restrict, binge. And it would happen every day. And I was living in a nightmare. And the thing about like having that spiritual awareness, like I knew there was a God who loved me and cared about me. And I thought maybe I needed to like control my own eating for God, if that makes sense. It's kind of weird. So I started therapy actually at the age of 28, because I realized that I had a major problem, that I couldn't stop eating and I didn't know what was wrong with me. And I remember going into my counselor and saying, hey, I don't know what's wrong with me. I just keep eating food, but I'm the happiest person you'll ever meet. And she was like, I'm sure that's true. I was like, my mom's my best friend. My husband is perfect. And I'm super happy. It was really funny to me later, because what food had done for me was cover up any negative emotion, any perception of hardship, any downfalls of others around me. Like food was my go-to. It was my solution. It was just totally what I did. So I found therapy helpful. It did not solve my problem. I did lots of therapy and it was very helpful for a lot of my emotional healing. Definitely got deep forgiveness work from my abusers and different things like that. I did some eating disorder support groups. Actually, around that time, found OA. Went to OA as just kind of one option of a support group situation. This was about 15 years ago. And kind of went in and had the same feeling I had at the pay and weigh. Like, these people are a little too far for me. That was really pride and arrogance. It was not actually based on reality, because I was super far gone as a compulsive overeater. But I still felt like, I don't think I need this extreme 12-step program. I think I just need the next diet or to kind of white knuckle some more. So I didn't stay long and left. And then about 2 years ago, so again, like I said, like I kind of like tried to perform my own white knuckle diet for God, if you will. And so I ended up losing quite a bit of weight. My top was about 350 pounds. And I lost probably 150 of that just by like knowing that God had something better for me. So I worked really hard and lost a bunch of weight, but I was not free from the obsession. I was not free from my addiction. I was not free from the mental twist. So about 2 years ago, I had started gaining back some of the weight that I'd lost. And I went back to OA. This time I used it as a support group for my diet. So that was about 2 years ago. Excuse me. And honestly, it was nice. I did the tools. I made calls. Like I got through the steps with a well-meaning sponsor, kind of relaxed, kind of like easygoing, maybe just like read it and go, yeah, I did it. I lost a couple pounds and felt a little better. You know what I mean? And I left again. That was 2 years ago. I probably stayed for like 3 months. And then last year, I had a huge life circumstance, job change, and my world started to crumble around me. And I, in all my relationship with God and what I thought it was, I'm a spiritual person. In fact, I have a spiritual job. I work in the church. And no matter what your religious affiliation, you are welcome here. And I am one of you. So I thought I had it, I don't know, figured out. You know what I mean? Like I thought I knew the God of my understanding. But when my job situation kind of fell out from under me, I went straight past God, straight past go, straight to the food. And I started binging like I don't even know what. The worst it's ever been. They say the disease is progressive. The disease is progressive and we will just get worse and worse and worse unless we have a power that can do for us what we can't do for ourselves. And so my disease got super bad last year and I just straight past God and started eating. Food was my God. And I just needed it all day, every day. I was binging all day and I started gaining rapidly. And the emotional havoc of my life was just taken out on food. I started to gain weight really fast and my joints were in so much pain. I have a 3-story house. I couldn't walk up my stairs. I started to feel that feeling of like, okay, now I need like surgery. Like I need something to wire my jaw shut, or I need like a hospital. I need like, what is the like modern day, you know, retreat, resort, like how much does it cost? Does my insurance cover it? Like I need someone to lock me away and not let me get to food because I'm going to die. That's how I felt. I would have my kids run upstairs to get things for me. Like I would leave the upstairs once because my bedroom was upstairs and I would return to it once. And it was so painful. It was so painful. So I came back to OA in December of last year. And this was the first time I came into OA or into any program with desperation. Usually I would fix myself first a little bit and then go do the diet. Does that make sense? Like I would go, oh, I'm going to fix my food plan. And then I'll go to this diet or this diet or this diet or this nutritionist or this. I would always like have this little, like, I'll make myself feel better. Like I'm in control for a couple of days or a couple of weeks, and then I'll go do that. So this is the first time that I just came in and just was like, guys, I'm binging every day and I can't stop and I don't know what to do. And people would come, I'd come into the rooms and people would say things like, just keep coming back and, you know, work the tools. And I didn't know what it meant to actually read and apply the instructions in this book. I didn't know that yet. So there was a gal that I met. I'm going to get into the steps now. There's a gal that I met couple years ago in OA. And I thought she just was awesome. And I felt like she had herself together. She had what I wanted. And that was exciting to me. And so I had asked her like, how are you doing? What are you doing? What meetings are you going to? Because I was providing service in the meeting that I was going to while I was binging every day and gaining at a rapid pace and just ready to really like, I was like, the food's just going to have me and I'm going to die. Like that's what I'll do. I'll just get a wheelchair and like, it's the end. Or I have to go to some camp or some hospital or something. So this friend of mine, she told me about a few meetings that she was going to that were big book focused and that would take you and read the big book with you. And I was like, okay, well, I guess I'll read the big book. That's fine. I'll go to those meetings. And she started, she used the word hospitalization, which I don't want to confuse people. There's no like actual hospital to go to, but I was like, God basically said to me, like, that's what you wanted. Remember? You wanted to be like checked in somewhere. So how about the OA hospital? And I was like, sign me up. I want this. And so I had asked that gal to sponsor me. And gratefully she did. I mean, I'm so grateful to her for sponsoring me. I think she was pretty new through the steps herself. And so that was really, really exciting. And so from that time, this is what I did. I was so desperate, you guys. I knew I was going to kill myself with food. Like, this has been my whole life. I'm 45 years old now. I've been messing around with food the whole time. And she said that she had recovery and that she had recovered by following the 12 steps and that she could hold my hand and show me what to do. And I grabbed hold of that picture of the hospital and I said to my sponsor, I will do whatever you say. I have nothing to lose now. I only have something to gain or die. Like, that's basically how I felt. I was like, I'll do what you say. So I highly recommend that.
That's 15 minutes, Annie.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, no problem.
If you're desperate like me, what I learned about surrendering to my sponsor was that taught me how to surrender to God. So when she first said, hey, this is how you're going to do it. And this is how I did it. I'm just sharing how I did it. Some sponsors do it differently, but sponsoring through the big book, my sponsor had me go to three phone calls a day, a meeting a day. I wrote, you know, I surrendered my food every morning to her before I ate it. And she helped me make a red light, green light food plan, which I had never been willing to like give up my red light foods. I'd never been willing, but I was like, what am I going to do? I had heard somebody in a meeting say something like, I've had enough sexy food to last 10 lifetimes. I don't need anything fancy. Like, I'll just eat whatever is nutritionally sound for me. So that was kind of like in the back of my head. And then when the picture of a hospital, like, it was like really cool. Like, I felt like God, like, kind of unpacked that a little bit more for me of like, if you're in a hospital, somebody brings you three meals. Like, they have a nutritionist that plans those meals and then they bring them to you and they're set. Like, the portions are there. Like, you don't get to get up and go to the kitchen. Like, you're in a bed, you know? So I was like, how do I build this metaphor so that I can like feel like this surrendered food plan to my sponsor is exactly what God has for me, exactly what they bring me in the hospital. Right. So getting to the doctor's opinion, that was the first thing that my sponsor had me read. And on XXVIII, this is a really important paragraph to me. Emotional appeal seldom suffices. The message which can interest and hold these alcoholic people must have depth and weight. In nearly all cases, their ideals must be grounded in a power greater than themselves if they are to recreate their lives. And that's what I knew I wanted, is a new life. The life that I had and the way that I treated food as my go-to for everything, happy, sad, angry, depressed, celebrating, like literally anything, I went to food. So I knew I needed a do-over, right? Like a total do-over of life. And so reading the doctor's opinion was one of the first steps. To get to step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. Admitting I was powerless was pretty easy for me to do. I knew I was powerless. I had done enough research to see that I constantly went to food, constantly drove through restaurants, constantly every transition of my day. It was like, where could I find some food? Like, it's literally how I lived. But my life being unmanageable, that was a little bit more tricky. I felt like unmanageability, I could manage it with food, but my joints and my personhood, my getting around in my body was completely unmanageable. Like, I felt the weight of uncomfortability in my skin. Like, I felt it. and God's still, we're still working on it. I'm still in process. So that's step one. Step two, I came to believe a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And step three, I'll talk about them together, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand him. This is the thing to newcomers. It can be overwhelming to look at all the steps. Please don't let it overwhelm you. They are so sweetly one at a time, one day at a time, holding the hand of your sponsor. Like, really let yourself like surrender to your sponsor and hold their hands, because they will point you to God, point you to the higher power. I wanted to point that out too. In We Agnostics on page 45, this is brilliant. So much is brilliant in this book. That's right, second paragraph on page 45, lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. So my power, again, like I've said already many times, was food. Literally one trick pony could beat the dead horse. Like, I was like, food was it. That was my power. Pretty ridiculous. So, but I did have a faith. I did have an understanding of God. In fact, I worked in that arena and shared with others God's love for them. But for some reason, this is so funny. When my sponsor was taking me through step two and then step three, like, is my power greater than myself? And is it able to restore me to sanity? Because I didn't give God that credit. I thought God could part the Red Sea, move mountains, resurrect people from the dead, but could not restore me to sanity. I thought I was outside of that. Like, that's some special kind of specialness. I thought I was outside of that power, and that God wasn't quite powerful enough. There's definitely this little, so turning in that number three, making a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. That was where the crux of it was for me. There's somebody since that, I told you guys that early story of my childhood. From such a young age, food was my support. Food was my plan. Food was my total. So there was a little part of me, like a very young part of me, that said, hey, Annie, I don't know why you're going to OA. I don't know why you need a power greater than yourself. I've got it figured out. Binging is the answer. She was pretty obnoxious, and I was a little bit afraid of her. I know that sounds weird to talk about. So I was really, when I came to step three, I was like, can I turn over all of me to the care of God? That includes this little strange voice that thinks they rule the world with excess food. And I was really scared. And I was really like, hey, I called my sponsor multiple times during step three and said, I don't know if I can do it. I don't know if she'll let me. She'll let me. It's so weird to talk about. Because there was this part of me that was like, sure, that I could handle my life with food. And it was so cool to be like, you know what? Let's just ask God. Is God strong enough? Can God give me a bigger view of God? Does that make sense? Like, I need God to increase my faith in his power, in their power, in God's power. And so giving that, like symbolically, giving the hand of that little girl, that little frayed girl inside of me that was sure that she had all the answers with excess food, I had to give that little girl to God. I had to go like, hey, you know what? I can't deal with her. I just like, follow her. Like, have you guys heard of the hurt girl driving the car? You can't let the hurt girl drive the car. You also can't let her, you also can't shove her in the trunk. Sounds really horrible. But like my little girl, like I would let her drive or I would shove her in the trunk. Either one of those things. But I really needed to give her to God. I needed to take her hand and hand her to God, the power greater than myself that's able to restore me to sanity. And this is all happening in conjunction with my sponsor helping me with my food plan, me surrendering my food to her. That was what helped me surrender to God in step three, was surrendering my food, which was kind of my God. Like my weird attachment to food was my God. And surrendering that to my sponsor as she helped me get through step three. And the way I did the steps, and sponsors do it differently, the way I did the steps was through reading the big book and discussing it with my sponsor, underlining, each page is full of underlines, and then discussing it with my sponsor, but also listening to podcasts. So many of these beautiful recordings have so many people talking about their recovery. Getting to steps 1, 2, and 3 saved my life. Literally saved my life. Working through steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 was quite the trudge. And I didn't understand it at the time. And I'm, if you're new, you don't have to worry about it. Just take your sponsor's hand and help let your sponsor lead you to the power greater than yourself. But as you work 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, something miraculous happens. You're cleaning house of all of the wreckage of your past, and God has space to work and help you be free. It's really incredible. So I'm still new. I'm about 6 months in, and maybe 7, and God is still revealing little spots of resentment, little spots of pain, I forgot about this piece that I need to go ask for forgiveness. I need to make amends for. So having steps 10, 11, 12, excuse me, be a part of my daily life and rhythms is really brings all of 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 into my life. But continuing to take personal inventory in step 10, promptly admitting it when I'm wrong. My gosh, this program is humbling. I make jokes often with some of my fellows, like, I just came here to lose some weight and to stop obsessing about food and stop binging. And y'all want to like make me a better person. I was like, God and the Big Book, they like actually want to make me a better person, like, which is lovely, right? It's just not my selfish motives were not that. They were really about me. What do they say? Some people say you come for the vanity and stay for the sanity. Super true for me. So, but it's been such an interesting process of going like, oh my gosh, I didn't believe it when people said they were covered. I'll tell you a little bit. I've got a few more minutes. I'll tell you a little bit about the miracle that happened, but I didn't believe it when people said they were recovered because I knew I had 40 years of evidence that you can't recover from this. Like, we're just supposed to be miserable together forever. Like, that's what I thought. And then as God started doing for me what I couldn't do for myself, I'm in shock. So, sorry, I'm jumping around a little bit. I'll touch on 11. Prayer and meditation every day has saved my life. Having a time with God every day helps me establish like his rhythms for my life. Surrendering my own, because remember, my one plan is one thing, right? I've said it multiple times, food, that's my plan. Binging is my plan. That is my only plan. So God's plan for me is so much more free and light and calm and peaceful. And it might require me going to someone and saying, I'm sorry. It might require me, like, before I hit my head, hits the pillow, I go through my resentments for the day. And I'm like, oh crap, I was resentful today. And I send it to a fellow because I might, and I say to them, I think I'll have to do a 10th on this tomorrow. Like, I just say that to in my steps 10, 11, and 12. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, carry the message to other alcoholics and practice these principles in all our affairs. Here's the thing, giving it away, like as a person that works in a faith community, giving away what we have is just like, teachers know this. It helps us understand it. Like step 12 is such a gift to me. To walk somebody through the steps only helps me understand the steps deeper. Getting to step 12 and sponsoring people is messy and hard, and people are hard and I'm hard. We're all a little wonky. Because that's what makes us compulsive overeaters. But it's such a gift because it keeps me fresh in the like one, I don't ever want to go back. I don't ever want to go back, you guys. I was miserable. I was miserable every day. So now I'll just tell you for a minute, like what it's like for me now. God has done for me what I can't do for myself. It's a freaking miracle. I never thought it would happen. I always thought I had to do it for God. No, that's not how it works. I can't do it. I'm not strong enough. I don't have the power, but God has the power. Oh, I love that line. You know what? You guys, some of you might know it. I'm going to struggle to find it. It's really sweet. It says that God has the power and may you find him now. Some of you might know what it is. It's really, really good. So what it's like for me now, my daughter's birthday was this weekend and I bought her a cake and I bought her a bunch of crap food. Like my family are not compulsive overeaters. I've been realizing since I've been abstinent and since I've been free of the compulsion to have food neutrality, like it's a freaking miracle. Like, so they'll get something, you know, not on my food plan in the house. And I literally don't care about it at all. This is 100% a miracle and not me. I can literally see it sit on my counter for days and be like, guys, do you want this? And they're like, no. And I'm like, what the heck? Like, how is that a thing? How can you like not care about this? And then after a couple of days, I'll just be like, okay, I got to throw it away now because it's gross. So what I'm realizing, guys, is that all the Christmas candy, all the Valentine's candy, all the sugar foods in my house, nobody was eating them. Nobody else cares about it. I don't have any other compulsive overeaters in my house. It's kind of weird. But lovely. Awesome. Amen. So glad they don't have that struggle. But I had Mother's Day this last Mother's Day. This is my first abstinent, first food neutral, like trip to Disneyland, Mother's Day. I used to wake up feeling so sorry for myself. The 12 steps and God's power has helped me, relieved me of self-pity because I have to keep going back to him and confessing it and asking him to take it. Do you guys know something? I got to quickly say these things. You can ask God to remove your defects of character and he does it. It might be a little bit each day, but he does it. So even having a fellow that says, wow, Annie, you sound selfish or you sound like self-protective. That's one of my big ones. You can ask God to take that away. My anger, my resentments, my fear. I say, God, please remove my fear. It's really, really beautiful and really wonderful to have that relationship with my higher power that's grown and is strengthened and is making me into, sorry, I'm going to cry about it, what I read at the beginning, a recreated life, a do-over. I'm so grateful. I never, ever, ever want to be out of this room, out of this fellowship. I make my calls every day. I go to a meeting almost every day. If I miss a meeting, I might go to two the next day. I love going to meetings. I spend time with God every day. I still submit my food to my sponsor. It's just a way I can stay safe. Obviously not in hospitalization anymore, but I still think of it as that nurturing, loving presence of like this food that is already planned for me is all I need. That half a cup of rice, that chicken, those vegetables, like it's no big deal. It's not a problem. It's over there. And it's just what I eat to like keep living. And I'm just really, really grateful for the opportunity to share. And I'll put my phone number in the chat. And with that, I pass. Thank you so much for having me.